Coming up on KUCB News, researchers are looking into how PSP spreads to seabird populations, and the Alaska legislature could consider an amendment that would add permanent fund dividends to the Constitution. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Theo Greenlee with some local news on Monday, July 26th, 2021. Unalaska has recorded remarkably high paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP, levels in recent years. Concentrated levels of PSP can be deadly to humans, but there's not much data on how the toxins that cause PSP spread through the larger food web. A group of biologists from the United States Geological Survey recently visited Unalaska to collect bird and fish samples to test for the toxins. As KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports, they're hoping to learn more about the connections between recent seabird deaths and high PSP levels.
When you mention paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP, most people think of mussels or clams. That's because eating those animals can be deadly if they have high PSP levels. But PSP doesn't just affect mollusks and humans. Sarah Shane is a wildlife biologist for the United States Geological Survey. She's interested in how saxitoxins, which cause PSP, make their way through the food chain, starting with warm ocean waters, moving to mussels, and all the way up to seabirds.
We don't really know how this toxin moves through the food web, so it's there's still a lot of unknowns, but the more information we can collect about it, the more we'll understand it.
Shane visited Unalaska in July to collect samples of seabirds and fish to learn more about how the toxin travels, specifically where it gets magnified or diminishes. She says this project started about 5 years ago when a major heat wave hit the ocean and an estimated million birds died from Alaska down to California.
Because there have been more and more marine die-offs in the last several years than have ever been reported. These large bird mortality events happen periodically through time, but the rate, the magnitude and duration and extent of them has really increased since about 2015.
Researchers found some levels of toxins in the birds from these major die-offs, but Shane says they didn't know what that meant for their overall health.
So it was still unclear if algal bloom's toxins could have had played a part in their death. So the project has kind of expanded from there.
She says very little work has actually been done to look at the saxitoxin levels in seabirds. Most people focus on invertebrates like mussels or clams and how those affect humans. Shane says Unalaska is a great place to gather more samples because of the uniquely high PSP levels found on the island over the past couple years. The FDA sets 80 micrograms of toxin per 100 grams of tissue as the safe limit of consumption for humans. Around the beginning of July last year, samples of blue mussels collected in Unalaska showed toxin levels that were more than 100 times higher than that safe consumption limit.
Those are levels that make us interested in figuring out what's going on in the whole food web.
Shane and her team want to discover if these toxins play a role in the recent record-breaking bird deaths and to see whether they transfer to seabirds in higher levels or not. Sometimes it can be tricky to trace samples back to the same algal bloom or toxin, Shane says. But it was pretty simple to make those connections in this recent sampling in Unalaska.
But in this case, everything looks to be super connected. The mussels are filtering in the plankton that we're collecting right offshore. The fish are eating the plankton, the birds are eating the fish, and they're all in the same system.
Shane and her colleague Daniel Donnelly, another biologist on the team, collected samples of various fish, including sand lance and Pacific sandfish, as well as species of seabirds like horned puffins and black-legged kittiwakes. Donnelly says collecting all of those in a matter of about a single day was pretty hectic.
We're collecting a lot of different samples in pretty rapid succession, so you have to be able to switch gears and say, okay, now we have to get a zooplankton tow out. All right, well, the zope tow's out. Well, we need to prep jars and bags and label up all this other stuff because all these data...
Donnelly is an avid hunter and shot some of the live birds to bring back to the lab to study. Others were collected from local fishermen who found and froze dead puffin, for example, after a recent die-off. Shane says collecting and tracking data in a place like the Aleutians, where there are few scientists, can be tricky. But getting help from locals is a useful way to keep track of marine behavior and things like strange die-offs. She says people can call the Marine Stranding Network or find contacts through the Alaska Harmful Algal Bloom Network if they notice something strange. Shane says they're hoping to have some of the samples from this trip analyzed by the end of this year. In Unalaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
The Alaska legislature has 1 week to go before the scheduled start of a special session, and it's not yet clear whether a working group of lawmakers will recommend proposals the rest can consider during the session. The working group is weighing whether to recommend amending the state constitution. Governor Mike Dunleavy has proposed putting permanent fund dividends in the constitution. He wants to spend 50% of the money drawn annually from the permanent fund on PFDs. The other 50% could pay for state services. Group co-chair Senator Lyman Hoffman raised the possibility of phasing in new revenue. He spoke at a working group meeting on Thursday.
One concept could be that we would agree to the 50-50 split, but we would have to come up with a stair-stepped approach until the revenue measures came into place.
Hoffman is a Bethel Democrat who caucuses with Republicans. Dunleavy is a Republican. Currently, the PFD amount under a split would be roughly $2,350. That's nearly twice the average paid over the past 5 years, but it's more than one-third lower than what would be paid under the formula in state law. But without new taxes or spending cuts, the state would spend more than $900 million than it raises each year. Hoffman said the dividend could be phased in as new revenue measures go into effect. Palmer Republican Senator Shelley Hughes is a working group member who called into the meeting on Thursday. She said there's an advantage to not cutting dividends to close the gap. Only Alaskans receive dividends.
When you use part of the PFD to close that revenue, it impacts residents only. Other forms of revenue impact non-residents as well.
The working group is weighing several proposed constitutional amendments that would protect permanent fund earnings and limit how much money is drawn from the fund each year. And 17-year-old Lydia Jacoby from Seward cruised through her Olympic semifinal, winning her heat and posting the third fastest time of the day in the women's 100-meter breaststroke on Monday in Tokyo. Jacoby will compete in the women's final on Tuesday in Tokyo, that's tonight in Alaska, just after 6 p.m. Alaska time. Jacoby swam slightly slower in her semifinal than in her quarterfinal, which she also won. In the final, she'll face world record holder and fellow American Lily King. She'll also face South Africa's Tatiana Schoonmaker, who set an Olympic record in the quarterfinals. Unalaska's city council meets tomorrow evening after taking a week off. They skipped the last session because there weren't any agenda items. Tomorrow's agenda includes a vote that could raise Unalaska's sales tax levy from 3% to 4%. The idea is that it would create a utility infrastructure fund to supplement existing funds. Community members are encouraged to participate. Public comments may be given in person at the meeting, virtually via Zoom or telephone, or by submitting written comments. The meeting takes place at City Hall on Tuesday evening at 6 o'clock. More information is available on our community calendar at kucb.org. And this is your week for civic engagement because on Thursday, the City of Unalaska is hosting a legislative fly-in. Unalaska residents will get the chance to meet their elected officials, including senator and representatives of the state legislature, as well as the commissioner of Alaska's Department of Transportation. It takes place on Thursday evening from 5 to 7 at the Margaret Bay Cafe in the Grand Aleutian Hotel. And we want to hear from you. Let KUCB know what issues or questions are important to you. Drop us an email at news@kucb.org. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Theo Greenlee, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at KUCB.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.